starting my weekly open mic Twitter space where I just dedicate an hour of my time to see if anybody wants to hop in and talk about anything, ask questions, share things. Sometimes I have things to share as well. I'll probably share some updates. But yeah, so I usually start about 5 to 10 minutes in, so if you're listening to this recording, go ahead and just skip forward and hop through this one and, find the spots where there's good conversations happening. But yeah, I'm gonna go on mute for a few minutes here while I get this thing shared out and get set up and so forth. But yeah. So, Joker, I haven't really started or anything. I'll invite you up. It works. Sometimes it does.
So,
Oh, it
Joker,
worked. Oh, let me mute my system
I'll
here.
invite
Hold
you
on.
up.
There we go. Can you hear me?
Yeah, how's it going? Good morning.
Pretty good, man. How are you?
Oh, doing good. Saw the cyber security, so I figured I'd pop in and listen.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I don't I usually do one of two things. I usually either have a topic to go through or I kind of just set aside an hour of my time to see if anybody hops in and has questions or topics or something. So I usually have people that hop in that want to talk about getting into cybersecurity, or last week I had Cerberus on from Cerberus.io and he wanted to talk about some things, and I was just kind of dedicating my time as a part of my project. But I'm actually traveling for work this week and I'm in a hotel room, so not enough time to really prepare for topics or not. So I'm just sitting here for an hour and see if anybody wants to talk about anything. I was looking for things to talk about. I was thinking about talking about well, I thought about talking about two things. One is SOAR, security orchestration, automation, and response, and then talking about also some of the cryptography jargon we see in Bitcoin and Cardano and stuff like that. But I think those topics might be a little high level for people too, though, so or too in depth. I don't know, too technical, but.
Now, I remember you saying that in the town hall when you were giving your presentation there. And really was, I mean, like, yeah, you couldn't understand the ins and outs of how everything worked, but you could understand how everything came together, if you understand what I'm saying. So it's informative, even like if you can't understand the nitty-gritty of it.
That's true. And yeah, you're right. That's kind of the thing I tell a lot of people, because what happens a lot of times is someone will see a topic, they'll see standards for SEC, right? So standards for ethical or efficient cryptography, and they'll see ED25519, ECDSA, and all these other weird terms. And so what will happen is somebody will see something like that and just say, they'll just push it off and say, well, that's not for me. I won't have any idea what they're talking about. But what I try to tell people is read that thing anyway, listen to that thing anyway, watch that thing anyway, because there might be, you may not understand 50 minutes out of the 60 minutes of that thing, but you might get some things out of that, and then you just start growing your knowledge from there, right? I don't know. A lot of people get sh they shy away from things that they don't understand because, rightfully so, it's probably very above their head, but that doesn't mean they can't pick useful things out of that, though, So I think that's probably what I was talking about.
No, absolutely. I agree with that. When setting up my node, I'm just running a relay node. But when you don't know anything about it, it can be very overwhelming. You're afraid to hit yes or no because you don't really know what you're hitting yes or no to. So I definitely feel you.
That's true. And I guess, with that sentiment, what I'm doing this week for work is, so I work in cybersecurity, right? I'm in a thing this week about something called SOAR, Security Operation Automation and Response. Simply, I thought about this a lot for projects in crypto. I think about a lot of what I do, and I relate it to where the blockchain world is today. That happens on a daily basis. So this week we're going through the automation response stuff. Essentially, simply put, it's just a it's a set of fundamentals for improving the human deficiency in companies where they don't have enough people, or they have a dozen different security solutions and their employees can't be an expert on everything, time management and stuff like that. So what they do is they have these things called, within the SOAR fundamentals, they have these things called playbooks, and and I'm breaking it down more and more here as I go along, but they do is they have playbooks, and within the playbooks they have what they call plugins. Plugins are essentially sets of code, mostly written in Python or Bash or simple scripting, scripting languages like that. So what they do is they create these plugins, they put them within playbooks, and within the playbooks they use multiple playbooks to create this, like if you're familiar with Joker, if you're familiar with Visio, or like just really, I guess in more broadly put, diagrams, right? So they have this diagram where they have these different playbooks, and if situation A occurs, it tells you to go do all of these things, right? So you start at this playbook, it tells you what to do, and you go to that playbook, it tells you what to do. Furthermore, it automates a lot of that, right? So if it says, go, lock down, go disable the front end website, right? Or and then send an alert to whatever team member is responsible for reacting to that. I mean, I guess it's a very simple explanation or simple example because it usually breaks down into many different steps. Like I work in, I usually I've worked in a lot of ransomware cases, and there's dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of steps to that, right? So there's all sorts of things to do, and things like SOAR come into play right there. But I was trying to relate that to projects building on blockchain and kind of where they are in the infancy of things like that. So I think a lot about, 20 years ago where the internet was at that point. There wasn't any regulation. I'm talking specifically in terms of security and user data and stuff like that, right? Not financial anything. But, any regulations, any certifications, any processes to follow, guidelines, there wasn't things like this. There wasn't the SOAR concepts, but now there is. 20 years later, I mean, all these hospitals have to follow HIPAA regulations. All of Europe has to follow GDPR. A lot of government agencies have a lot of regulations and certifications they have to go through around things called ISO certifications and so forth. But you don't see a lot of that being applied to blockchain companies, projects, whatever you want to call them. And but I guess there's two things that I think about a lot when I get to that part of the thought process, where one, they still fall under a lot of those. I mean, if anybody's registered in a European country, I don't care that you're a blockchain company, you still follow GDPR re regulations. That covers every single human, right? But then you got things where these certifications, maybe processes, like you have auditing teams out there, right? And you hear about, Liquid got audited, and they had their code audited and stuff like that. But where's the thing that holds them accountable? Not Liquid, I'm just saying anybody in general. Where's that thing that holds them accountable? Or, I guess more specifically put, is it, it's not as, I guess, just routine and fluid as traditional internet is, right? So this is a thing I talk to a lot about different teams. I try to get that point across to them, right?
That's interesting. So basically, you're just making a cybersecurity playbook. If this happens, then do that. And you just kind of make these briefs for tech companies to walk them through how to protect themselves if something does happen.
That's yeah, I'd yeah, well, I guess there's two things. I'm not I'm first of all, unlike my day job in cybersecurity, that's one of the 50 different things I do, but I mean, I'm not sure, Joker, how familiar you are with my project, but also I have a Catalyst proposal project that was in Fund 9, where basically I just dedicated a certain amount of my time every week to help different So I have meetings with teams or individuals. I host these Twitter spaces to just try to dedicate some of my time to help people. I write documentation, I do YouTube videos, all sorts of stuff like that to try to help the Cardano community and just spread cybersecurity awareness, if you will, right? So yeah, I do SOAR stuff and many other things in my day job, but I try to relate what I'm doing in my day job to my project to help the Cardano community, right?
I got you. So what would you say, in your experience, what's like the top three things that users of blockchain do that opens themselves up for potential security risks?
Specifically related to when they're doing blockchain stuff. The top three things from a user perspective that I think is most common that so one is something that I say all of the time, and it's not surprising, it's not flashy or nothing like that, but it goes all the way back to the beginning of the internet though, where people are so quick to react. Right, where they think they act before they think. So if someone sends you a very clever message, says, "Hey, check out this new project real quick. I just heard about it." And then you click the link, and by then it's too late, right? You click a link, and it leads you to a domain that runs automated scripts, right? And then now you have, that now they're starting to do their thing, whatever their thing is, as a bad actor, right? So people are very quick just to click things without thinking. I try to always relate it to think about back in, I don't know if you your age, right? But back in the 90s and stuff like that, it was very common for people to knock on your door to solicit, right? Solicit their product. That's not so common now because most things are online, right? But what did you do? You didn't, for one, you probably didn't answer the door. For two, if you did, you were very, very inquisitive. You didn't just automatically sign the paper that they were handing you, right? So I always try to relate it to that. So, digital solicitation, just ignore that stuff, right? So I think that's the number one thing people, if I could just get people to stop clicking shit, half of the scams would go away. I guarantee it, right? The other thing is not knowing. And this isn't something they do, it's just a lack of knowledge because it's not that readily easily available, right? So using tools at your disposal, right? For example, in blockchains, Cardano here as an example, right? We have multiple different teams that analyze projects, or they report on things, or they alert you on things, or knowing how to use different tools like VirusTotal to check a website or check a URL or an attachment or a document before you open that thing or before you go to that thing. I think that would help people a lot too if they did that. Then that thing they wanted to click on, maybe they could be more sure about that thing. I think a
Interesting. Now, I know that you can scan files and all that before you open them and everything, but like I got a web advisor, so like if it's the website's got history of bad stuff or they're suspected of bad stuff, it will throw an alert up. But you're saying before you even go to that website, you can scan it.
Yeah. There's a bunch of places. There's a bunch of things I would recommend. One is called VirusTotal, right? VirusTotal is probably the most widely used free open source website for people in security to put in. You can put in a hash value of a file. You can upload a file. You can put in a URL, and it'll report back based on a whole bunch of different security vendors and some analysis whether it's potentially safe or not. Right? You can go to there's a Google has its own website, transparency.google.com. You can go there and put in stuff, and it'll tell you its security rating. Then you have things when you get more specific to domains. Do you remember recently where someone created that fake Cardano Midnight Twitter account, and they created that fake Midnight website? Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I heard about the Twitter account. I didn't know that they created a fake website.
Yeah, they created like, I don't forget what it was. It was something like midnightbeta.io. They made it look like the Midnight website, and they changed the URL just a little bit. And they were basically trying to get people to give them ADA for Dust, which doesn't exist yet, right? So what they did was what they do is they just make that web, they copy all the imagery and everything of the main Midnight website. They make it look exactly the same, or for the most part, they give it just an obscure URL. And what you can do as a user in that situation, one is, are you, if you're, and not Cardano projects or not Midnight in specifically, just anything in general, Amazon or I don't know, YouTube. If you see a message from a large entity like that, like a Twitter account, the odds are that you're probably already like following them, right? Go quickly check to see if they're following them. If you're not following them, then that's already kind of a suspicious thing. Like, oh, that's weird. I should probably. I mean, I'm surprised I'm not following. Check who is following them. Basic things like that, right? Before you do that thing that they're offering you. Another thing is, there's two websites out there. One is called, you can go to who.is, and then you can go to ICANN, ICANN.org. And those are official sites where you can check the domain registry of a website, right? So a lot of the information is usually redacted, right? Like their personal information, their full name and address and stuff like that. But they're usually helpful information that you can usually find on those websites about a domain URL or a website is where it was registered, right? So when this fake Midnight website came out, I went to who.is and I went to ICANN. I found out it was registered with, like, I think it was like 1API GmbH or something. I don't know. It was some European registrar. So I go to the European registrar's website where you buy a domain, just like GoDaddy or something, right? I went there, I reported the URL. They found out it was malicious and they took it down within minutes, right? So those are some things that I would like to see more people doing too, right? Checking the domain information. There may be a lot of information there they won't understand, but what they could find is, probably specifically just look for the registrar. Where are they registered? Go to that website for the registered domain and, report it and they'll investigate it, right? Then let's see. Yeah, I mean, so yeah, checking the domain, checking the file. Oh, another thing I do too. So my website, right? Epochsec.io. There's a page on there where I put up my documentation. I have probably, I don't know, 8 or 9 documents on there. What I'll do is I'll put the MD5 and SHA-256 hash values, right? I don't know if you're familiar with hash values, but if I create a file, it has a hash value. If I open that file and I change one single character, it now has a new hash value, basically meaning it's a brand new file. So what I do on my website is I put the file, then I put the MD5 and the SHA-256 hash. What you can do is download that file. Now, before you open that file, you can check the hash value and say, this is the file he intended, right? Because you want to be sure that my website wasn't compromised if someone uploaded a malicious document unknowingly to me, right? Because if they upload a different file, then it'll have a different hash value, right? And then I actually have a video, if you go to my EpochSec YouTube, it shows you how to check hash values. It's extremely easy on Windows and Linux, right? You just r basically run a command that says MD5 and then the file name, and it spits out the big long number, right? And then you could just compare that to what I have. Now, people that are in cybersecurity like me will know that very difficult to do, but sometimes MD5s can be can have what they call collisions, right? But that is extremely rare. Most of the time, it's pretty safe to just assume that if I have the same SHA-256 or MD5, then I'm safe, right? Does that I just started going down a rabbit
Wow,
hole, I'm
man,
not sure.
you get super in depth with your security. I thought I was a little bit of a security nut, but now I've realized, like, I've been writing all these websites down as you've been spitting them out. I'm working, but I'm also talking with you. Wow. Like, I had no idea, like, that there was all this stuff, and then you're talking about, I mean, that's a little over my head with the file and checking to make sure that it's the same hash. I didn't even know that was possible to do with a normal file. So
You should check my YouTube page. If you just look for EpochSec, I'll send you the link to it, Joker. I'll send it to you here in a little bit. But I have a short video on there that shows you how to check the hash values. You could just skip to the Windows part if you use Windows, not Linux. I mean, it's extremely easy to do, man. Trust me, it is not over your head. Once you watch it, you'll be like, oh, that's easy as hell. You know?
Yeah, that's what's up. Yeah, send me the link to the YouTube. Yeah. I've seen you around on your Holy Macaroni account before, yeah. But I had no clue this is what you did. I like it, man. I think it's a pretty cool project.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I use this EpochSec account just so I can easily go find the recordings for the Twitter Spaces so I can report the Catalyst, right? but yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I guess I get in depth, but I mean, then again, this is what I've been, I eat, sleep, and breathe for 13 years, you know, so I better know something, right? But yeah, yes, things like that are real simple, man. And you know, and kind of what I'm kind of doing with my project between the documentation, the YouTube videos, the Twitter Spaces, all this stuff is what I'm trying my best to do is not help the people that are already skilled in cybersecurity. I'm trying to more help the daily average user that doesn't even know that they can go check a website if it's safe or not, right? Like, they bear, like someone that they know how to log into Windows and click an application, but that's it. So I'm really trying to help build some basic knowledge in that level of people, right? So that they can, to be cliche for a moment, so they can better, so they're more enabled to protect themselves on a daily basis, right?
Yeah, I can tell you that I'm definitely going to be utilizing that. Like I said, I wrote those sites down.
Yeah, and there's so many, man. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Yeah, yeah. But and I guess going back to your original question, the three things that people, you know, are most common mistakes, and I wanted to go back to that and mention one other thing is they don't, you know, the most common thing I see, and you know, back to the kind of the idea of people just naturally click on something without thinking. If I see a tweet from a Twitter account, or if I see a message from somebody, or if my best friend sends me something, I do four or five things before I even think about going to that thing ever, right? I will, like, for instance, on Discord, if someone messages me something, I'll go check if I'll share Discord servers with them. I'm in like 70 different Cardano Discords. I better share at least one with you. You know, then if I do, say I share one with you. That's kind of suspicious to me too. So I'll go to that one. I'll search that person's name in that Discord server. What I'll do is look at their, if they have communicated or not, right? Have they said anything in that Discord? And then if they have, what is their communication style? What are they saying? I'll do the exact same thing on Twitter. I'll look through their feed and say, okay, this person is just posting a bunch of, you know, here's 50,000 Bitcoin tweets all the time, you know, or maybe they're sharing a bunch of different Cardano projects. So, okay, they're in the Cardano. Maybe, okay, let me, kind of make sense. But then I'll start looking more into, do they have other social media? I'll go look at that. Or do they have their own website? You know, I might check that out. What I'm basically trying to do is either build confidence or lose confidence in that project or that person, right? So if I lose confidence, then I just walk away and I forget about it. If I build confidence, then maybe I'll go to that and check it out, right? I don't care if I come back with a positive or negative feeling about that thing. The point is the process of getting to that feeling, right? Or that confidence level, right? Sure. And
how long does that normally take you to do? Just out of curiosity, like.
Oh, not too long. I mean, maybe like if I find out about something in the morning, or if I get a message in the morning, or I see a new project in the morning, maybe I'll poke around there for a few minutes, and in the evening, maybe I'll spend like an hour looking into it. Usually, I mean, just that much time. I mean, tens of minutes or maybe a couple of hours if it's very complicated. No more than that, though, right? I mean, I'm just trying, it does, especially once you get in the fluid emotion of the way you like to re look into something, then it becomes, really quick, right? I mean, nowadays, like, I mean, I could, if I, like, I'll give you a perfect example. Someone messaged me on Discord some time ago, and I was in the Drunken Dragons Discord. This person, I clicked on their name. I saw that they are brand new to Discord. Took me 2 seconds to figure that out. I saw that I only shared one Discord server with them, Drunken Dragons. So I go to that Discord server. I look up their name. I see that they've literally said nothing in that Discord. That took me another 5 seconds. I messaged the moderators in that Discord. They didn't seem to care, so I left the Discord. So I mean, it took me all of a matter of minutes to figure out that person's I and I'm very careful to never say that person or that thing is definitely malicious. It's always potentially malicious to me, right? Until I know that they've actually done something. But if they're potentially malicious in my mind, then I don't even entertain it, right? I tell people a lot of times, another cliche statement is I would rather miss 9 out of every 10 10 good opportunities versus getting compromised that 1 out of 100 times. It only takes that 1 out of 100 times to wipe everything away, right?
Yeah, that's a legitimate point. And I see what you're saying. All right, so really, the longer it takes you to verify, the better it is. Because if you're just going in there and, like you're saying, most of the time, you're probably going to be able to knock it out in the first 30 seconds.
Right, and let's take Liquid for example, and DJed. Right, they're both launching this week. What if I lived in a cave and knew nothing about those two projects? Yeah, everybody in Cardano did, right? So, and I found out 30 minutes before they were both launching, right? And I knew to get the most advantage out of those projects, the moment they launched, I'd have to get involved, get some Liquid or get some DJed or whatever. Well, that 30 minutes is probably not enough time to learn enough about Liquid or learn enough about Zed to feel confident in them, right? I'm sure you know a fair amount about those two projects, like I do right now, right? So you'll know that, I mean, they're very complicated projects, right? So I wouldn't have enough to, and they've been building their projects for a year, year and a half, or something, or 2 years. So I don't have enough time. I know what I know about those projects. I wouldn't have enough time in 30 minutes. It might take me several days or a week or so with those kinds of projects, right? So I'm probably going to miss that initial wonderful opportunity, maybe, right? I don't know. I'm not good at those things, right? So I don't know if getting involved right away is a good opportunity or not, but say they were, well, I'm probably going to miss that opportunity. I'm perfectly fine with that, because what if one of those projects were a malicious project that, unknowing to me, I get involved right away, then somehow I lose everything, right? So there's an example of two are arguably great projects coming out that, if you didn't know any, if you live in a cave and didn't know anything about them, you might miss that opportunity, because it's wiser to be safe and methodical, right? I don't know if that's a good example or not. I took a shot at it, but
No, that's a good example. I was just getting back to my mic button. Yeah, man, that's a good point. I agree with you 100%. I'm just blown away that I never knew that there were websites you could go to check all that type of stuff that were official. I mean, it makes sense when you think about it, right? But all these
because
years on the internet and a year in crypto, and no one had ever even brought that up in the
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and I mean, The thing is, there is a lot of stuff out there like that because there's a whole lot of people out like to dig into things, right? So, but the thing is, when Bob or Nancy has their wallet and they're making a blockchain transaction, it's easy to get consumed in that and to think I'm in this Web3 stratosphere when 90% of everything you're doing in that moment is just traditional Web2 stuff. You're interacting maybe with a person, you're interacting with a website, maybe you're receiving or sending an email. You're still all that traditional internet Web2 stuff, right? And pretty much everything you're doing is still that. So the only thing blockchain period at that point is just when you hit send, and it's just doing, it's just sending your, it's just creating that blockchain transaction. Everything else is just regular internet at that point, right? So all of the traditional things that people do to try to bad actors try to do are still very prevalent at that point, right? That's another thing I try to keep people acutely aware of, right? Because I do it too. I forget a lot. I'm thinking, oh, I'm just all in this blockchain stratosphere, and I'm not. Hey, driving tip and Connor. Hey, thanks for joining. Thanks for joining. If you want to hop up and bring up anything or ask anything or share anything, please do. I'll send you an invite just to see. That way you can choose. But yeah, just for you guys, driving tip, I think you already know. I see you share my stuff sometimes, but Connor, I run a cybersecurity community support project in Cardano where I essentially, long story short, dedicate a certain amount of my time every week to help people out. But if you want to know more about my project, I'm actually Holy Macaroni on here. That's my main Twitter account. But you can go to my website, epochsec.io, go to YouTube, epochsec. You can DM me. You could talk on here, whatever you want to do. But yeah, I dedicate a certain amount of time every week to help different teams, individuals, et cetera, on Cardano. So, yeah. Hey,
I
driving
do
tip.
want to say thank
Go ahead.
you. I did watch your last video. It had a lot of really good tips, like the permission
Thank
settings
you.
and stuff. And honestly, I dug in and I really appreciate what you're doing already. Really good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, driving tip. I appreciate people like you that do check those things out and spend your valuable time as well, listening to what I do. I really appreciate that.
I will say, as much as you dumbed it down, it was still above my technicality, let's just say. But it's also because I'm not a Linux user. I'm a traditional user. So I appreciate all those steps and diving in. Thank you. And hey, Joker. Hey, Connor.
Cool. Yeah, that's what I try to do. I try to, as long as it makes sense, right? In each video I do, I'm going to try to do the Linux and the Windows equivalent, right? Because I know most people are Windows. I mean, I guess we do have a lot of people running relay nodes and stuff, so they're starting to use Linux. But I mean, I use Windows too, right? So we still have a lot of people using Windows. So I try to show both ways if I can. I'll probably never do Apple because I'm fundamentally against Apple. But look, that's my own personal view. But
That's actually really interesting, but I'm not going to go there. I got one, like, what's your stance on Ledger, right? Like, should people be using Ledger, or is Ledger overrated?
Using what the Ledger hardware device and the Ledger Live.
Yeah, 100.
I mean, undoubtedly use it. I don't have it pulled up right now. Maybe I can pull it up later and tweet it. But years ago, there was some vulnerability or something that Ledger had, but it was kind of misleading. I can't really remember exactly what it was. I think it was misleading because it wasn't like wallets were being hacked or anybody was losing funds or anything. It was something unrelated to that. Anyway, my personal opinion on Trezor and Ledger both are they are safe to use. You should be using them. I personally like the Trezor better just probably because I've just heard about it for so long ago from my brother. But Ledger's great too, though. Well, actually, Ledger's coming out with the Ledger Stacks. I wonder if that will change any security views on Ledger, right? I wonder how secure that is, if there's anything weird about that. I don't know that yet, right? Because it's not out yet. But yeah, definitely use Ledger and Trezor, undoubtedly, right? But there's risks to that as well, not from the application or the hardware level, but from you as a user level, right? Like, keeping that seed phrase, because if you're not, because we always talk about this where when you're using a hardware device, that is now on you. Now you are managing your stuff. You are the responsible one. Nobody else is at that point, right? So if you lose your laptop and your hardware device together, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of different scenarios. Or if you lose your seed phrase and your dog eats your treasure, then you're not able to recover your funds at that point. Things like that. So there are security risks when it comes to using hardware devices, but in my opinion, they're mostly all on the user themselves, and from the perspective of they are now the responsible party, solely the responsible party for their things at that point, right? They don't have anybody to rely on to help them if there's a problem, right? But that's I don't want to make that sound bad. I think that's a great thing, right? People should be responsible for themselves. We should hold individuals accountable for their own actions. But yeah, I definitely think, I mean, absolutely be using it 100%, right? I mean, think about it. I mean, you have a web wallet, right? It's an extension in your web browser. This goes back to what I said earlier, where, you might create a transaction on a blockchain, but everything is still the traditional internet world. That being the same with extensions and web browsers, right? There's all sorts of different possibilities of vulnerabilities that are introduced in extensions and web browsers, right? So, while your wallet on the blockchain is safe, sure, right? Then, but you don't know that your system is safe, that you have to trust that extension, you have to trust that web browser, et cetera, right? So again, just to beat a dead horse here, all of those same concerns, all those traditional concerns are still prevalent. What else? What else did I have? I think I had one other point to make on that. I just can't remember. One thing I personally like to do with my web browser extension wallets, Eternal, whatever, is I like to routinely go into that wallet and disconnect all of the different applications from my wallet, right? So if you're involved in NFT projects and they have their own website where you connect your wallet, or you connect your wallet to Discord to verify your wallet, or you're going to a DEX or a JPG store or something like that, and you connect your wallet, eventually that list can grow. Now, while innately that wallet only has read access, right, and not write access, I still think it's a security vulnerability and risk to leave those always connected, right? I would go into your wallet routinely and just practice disconnecting everything from that. It's easy enough when you go back to that website to just hit connect wallet, right? So why not disconnect it routinely just to practice reasonable security practices, in my opinion, right?
I hear what you're saying, right? But is it really a security vulnerability? Because you still have to sign that transaction, right? So I agree with you, and I clear my connection list out every so often and just reconnect to the ones that I'm using often. But at the same time, there's no way to have what happens in Ethereum happen on Cardano because you have to
No, no,
sign
no.
that transaction, right? So you
Agreed,
would
but now,
physically see it leaving.
yeah, you're dead right, Joker. Yeah, I mean, you still have to sign the transaction and all of that, right? So, and from that perspective, it's not a security vulnerability. But what if that extension has something to of a vulnerability in it where that bad actor can inject some code or something, and then breaking down a long possible path is you get something on your system, right, via a bad extension or, or a browser injection or something, to where now you have something malicious on your system. Now maybe you have a keylogger now on there, or bad actors gain admin privileges on your system or something like that. Then, now they could start gaining information about you. So again, without spending 30 minutes walking down a possible scenario, that could always lead to maybe they somehow get your seed phrase or signing password or something like that. And then, as long as if that bad actor is inside your system,
No,
long enough, and they're
I get it. I
you
pick
get it
up what
right,
you're laying
yeah.
down.
So
That's
your wallet on
interesting.
the chain itself is secure, sure, via your signing password and seed phrase and stuff, but that's probably not the very first thing they're going for, right? Potentially. I don't know, right? I mean, there's all different sorts of possibilities. I like to always
Yeah, they
follow
gain
the
access to your computer, you do online banking, your socials, all that. Yeah, I'm with you. Your email. Yeah.
Yeah. I always follow the trust but verify methodology, right? I may trust that this thing is safe and secure, but I want to verify, but I guess I get further in that where I really leave no possibilities of anything out there, or I try not to, right? Even if I think something is not possible, and I'm probably fine doing something that way, if there's a more secure way to do it, I'm going to, and it's, I'm probably going to do that. Now that brings up a good point though. So, every individual or every team or every entity always needs to find the right balance of security versus availability, right? How secure do you want to be versus how available do you want things to be, right? Ease of access versus security, right? So really that's always on the individual or the team to figure out what is best for them, right?
Yeah, no, I mean that's you brought up something I didn't even think about that with leaving your wallet connected to these websites, that
It's
blows my
probably,
mind.
I mean, to your point, the odds are it's probably fine to leave it like that. But we're saying probably fine, right?
Yeah,
But
living by chance isn't exactly a way to live. I hear you.
yeah. That's a good way to put it. Hey, Stu. Hey, Drake. If we got, a little bit time left here, if you guys want to hop up and. Or gals, if you want to hop up and ask anything or share any thoughts or points or anything, just request to speak. Joker, I appreciate you coming on today, man, bringing up all these questions and stuff. That's a lot of good food for thought you brought up today.
Yeah, no, I mean, I appreciate you holding the space. Like I said, I joined that room that you had the other day in town hall, and I found it highly informative, and I found this space highly informative too. Like, yeah, I'm not going to be leaving my wallet connected to anything anymore. I normally clear it out like once every 2 or 3 weeks and just reconnect, but now I'm gonna be disconnecting. Like, if it's not something I use every day, I'm not leaving it connected.
Right. And and another thing too, is just a completely random point, unrelated, but there were several projects recently. I think Blockfrost might have had this, don't quote me on it. And then there's an NFT project where and I don't know definitively if this happened or not, right? But I think that they had I think I heard they said they had API security vulnerabilities, right? So I guess I'll explain that in a moment, but the point I want to make is, anytime you're using a web browser, website extension, it doesn't matter what you're using. Somebody else wrote the code for that, right? So you're trusting that they wrote reasonably safe code to prevent bad actors from doing anything like injecting code or input validation, different things that could, bring that site down or compromise data, things like that, right? So, the blockchain side of what they're creating, I feel pretty pretty darn confident in, right? But they still have all the traditional internet stuff they have to build, right? So you're relying on that. Now, and back to the other example, if I don't know if everybody on here is familiar with APIs, but I've known APIs for a very long time in my life, and I can always forget. It's basically a programming interface. So if I create a website, right, and then I want to allow other projects or teams or individuals to pull information or push information or push an action, I'll create an API. Basically, it's a command that they can use with a security key as well, right, an encrypted key or whatever. I won't get into the technicals of that, but you can look up JWT tokens if you're interested, right? But anyway, they create APIs that allow you to either, there's multiple different commands, but the most common ones are GET and PUSH, right? A GET API means I can take this command from Bob's web, Bob's company gave me this API to interact with his website, so I can pull information. Right, so think about CNFT tools. They pull information from JPEG Store, they pull information from CNFT Jungle, et cetera, right? All those different companies have GET APIs for them to get that information. Right? Now you can also have push APIs, right, where I can push information to you. So in my world in security, maybe I want to push a list of systems to a security appliance to monitor them or push security software to them. So I have a push API that says, hey, take this list of computers and put it in that appliance, right? There are vulnerabilities that come along with that, right? So, if they're not using the right encrypted keys, if they're not using secure authentication, if they're not all these different, if they have it, if they're not doing input validation, right? So verifying that the information that it's expecting is in the right format. Right, so this happens a lot of time in code, to where somebody won't do that input out validation correctly, to where instead of putting in a username or password, I can put in a SQL script or something, right, and do something malicious, right, because you're not validating that the information you're receiving is what you should be receiving. So long-winded story, for I got a little technical there for a minute, so my apologies, but a long-winded story is, anytime anybody creates something that you're using, to some degree, you're relying on them to have created something secure and safe, right? Yeah.
No, yeah, that makes 100% sense. And don't apologize for getting over technical, because when you throw out terms and stuff, it gives people like me something to look up later, right? So, like, yeah, maybe
Yeah.
they don't understand that term like right now, but you're giving them something to chew on later, you know what I mean?
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a very good point. Yeah. Connor, Drake, Stu, checking in again with you. See if you have anything. If you want to hop up, you're welcome to. But yeah. What else? So, are you all familiar with what's coming in Cardano? Did you see the I don't know if any of you run stake pools or relays. Joker, you said you run a relay, right?
Yes, sir. I run a relay now. So no pool, but a relay.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah, so are you familiar with the SECP upgrade? Are you familiar with SECP at all, actually? So, right now on Cardano, let's see here. Let me get back to my notes. So Cardano current. So let me talk about this actually instead. So all these blockchain technologies use cryptography, right? We hear crypto cryptography, right? And here's like another maybe subconscious misconception commonly, that this is some new world, right? Where this SECP, the standards for efficient cryptography, has been out for, I don't know, 20 years now, I think, right? So along with that come diff you know within that there's a lot of different encryption algorithms, RSA, ECDSA, ED25519, a Schnorr, right? So things like Ethereum and Bitcoin use Schnorr and ECDSA. And Cardano is coming out with that update, right, to support those, right? I think that's to help along with the EVM sidechain and other stuff. Anyway, they're going to start supporting and making it easier for developers when it comes to using ECDSA and Schnorr. Currently, and the main one that Cardano uses is ED25519, right? As a matter of fact, I actually use ED25519 when I'm creating my own keys when I want to SSH into when you know you can SSH open SSH is available in Windows and Linux, right? And I SSH a lot between Windows and Linux in Linux and Linux using encryption keys. Well, I create my encryption keys using the command for ED25519 encryption. Well, it happens to be the encryption algorithm that Cardano uses as well. Right, so I guess the point is everybody hears cryptography and crypto and everything when blockchains are just taking advantage of already existing cryptography out there, right? Obviously, they're doing a lot of other amazing things. I think blockchain technology is absolutely stunning and amazing. But I guess I'm making the point that a lot of these cryptography algorithms have been out there for a long time, right? But essentially, ED25519, if you want something to look up, is ED25519 is a combination of EDDSA, so EDDSA, that's Edwards Curve Digital Signature Algorithm, and then elliptical curve 25519. So they take the elliptical curve and they take the Edwards curve and they combine it into ED25519, right? So, if you hear anybody saying Cardano is going to be supporting crypto algorithms now, that's not, all they're doing is providing support for other blockchain crypto algorithms. They have their own that works very well, right? But I would try to, like I said, going back to the very beginning part of it, the overarching thing with crypto algorithms is SECP, so Standards for Efficient Cryptography, right? You, if you want to go read a 90-page document, look up SECP and go have fun. you probably don't want to read that, but just know that that's been out there for quite some time, right? I thought that was something I was looking at this morning. I thought it would be a neat little tidbit of information to share. Hey, Jar Jar, welcome joining, and Michael or Michelle, thanks for joining. If you all have any security related points, topics, questions, you're welcome to hop up and bring them up. I'm actually only a few minutes from being at the top of the hour here for me, so I'll probably close up pretty soon. But Joker, did you have anything on what I was just babbling on about?
No, man, I actually love listening to you babble. I can see why you put on these cybersecurity things for companies and everything. Honestly, I could sit here and listen to you. If you had something planned out for the next 3 hours, I would be content sitting here listening.
Well, I'll make sure that I share these with you when I do them each week. Yeah, I see you in Cardano over coffee all the time too. I don't think I've definitely never interacted with you this much, but it's been an awesome conversation though.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I saw your Twitter in here, so I saw the Holy Macaroni, and that was the reason why I joined, because of that town hall. And then once I came in, I was like, oh, okay, this is his project he was talking about in that town hall.
Yeah, that's why I always include my Holy Macaroni account for it. For that exact thing, right? I really only have the Epochsec Twitter account just for just because I have my website. I just kind of wanted it, right? Other than that, I don't really need it, but yeah. But hey, everybody listening, I shared with Joker. If you want to, I do a lot of like, and sorry for the people that have already heard this 3 times now, but just for the people now listening, I had a Cardano Fund9 approved project to where I dedicate a handful of hours of my time every week for the next year, through actually through the end of October. I have individual meetings with teams, or I can, I can meet with you as an individual or as a team. I can, I have documentation out there on my YouTube page. I do these spaces, all that. Whatever kind of communication avenue you like, I'll do it with you if you need some cybersecurity help at any level, right? Very basic up to complex, it doesn't matter. Check out my website at epochsec.io. Check out my YouTube page. It's just epochsec. I try to use the same logo on here I have right here on everything, so it's easily identifiable. My website, epochsec.io, if you go to the blog page, I have my documentation there, my YouTube links, Twitter space links. If you go to epochsec.io/contact, you can see my Calendly on there, so you could pick a time slot and it'll send us a Google Meet invite. And if you want to talk about something, privately, yeah, I'm happy to do that. Or you can just send me messages on Discord, Twitter, Telegram, whatever you want, and I could just talk to you that way as well. But yeah. And sorry if my wife tells me I'm a very loud speaker, but I feel like I'm kind of quiet today. I'm in a hotel room traveling for work, and I'm trying to be respectful of the people next to me, but
No, you're good. You're good, man. Mikkel, down there, he's actually the lead dev for Teddy Swap.
Oh,
He
okay.
created that. What is it? I'm drawing a blank now, but it's
Armin.
Plutus TS, I believe.
Oh, okay. He created that? Cool. Well, Mikkel, if yeah, man, that's it's nice to, well, I invite you up, see if you want to hop up for a minute. Yeah, he did. There he goes. Hey, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm fine. Yeah, actually, I found myself developing that job because I found that our laboratories and our laboratories is taking care of developing the smart contract just to be precise.
Okay, you're developing the smart contracts?
Yep.
Awesome. I took the Plutus. Now, I might have been in cybersecurity for a long time, but I'm really only good with like Python and Bash and stuff like that. I took the Haskell and the Marlowe Pioneer courses, and I would probably need to take them about 10 more times to understand the basic concepts.
Well,
But
I need to provide the contact.
okay. Well, it's nice to meet you. Is it Mikkel or Michelle? How do you pronounce your name?
Michele.
Mikkel? Okay,
Yeah,
cool. Michele. Okay, great.
if you call me Michele, I'm used to it. No, don't worry.
I'm sure you are. I'm sure you are. Well, it's wonderful to meet you. I don't know if you heard that me and Joker are talking, but I'm talking on EpochSec right now, but I'm Holy Macaroni. So,
Yeah.
it's nice to meet you, man. If you guys at Teddy Swap ever have any questions at all security related, you're welcome to reach out to me, and I can try to point you in the right direction.
Sure. Yeah,
Cool.
you handle cybersecurity under like I had a look at your YouTube channel really quickly.
Okay.
Mostly like key. Like from user perspective or from the application perspective.
User perspective, right? Yeah, my YouTube site is really for, I'm kind of strategizing it to where I start off very basic on extremely basic individual topics, and I'll build that over time, because what I'm really trying to do from that perspective is help the average user that doesn't really know anything about security to start building their abilities to protect themselves on a daily basis, right? But yeah, I've been in cybersecurity for a long time, so I guess what I'm the point I'm making there is, I also work with individual teams too, right? I'm helping some teams with their overall cybersecurity strategy on a weekly basis. Sometimes teams just have basic questions for me, so I just kind of point them in the right direction. So it's really what I'm doing is a wide range of different support, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but a lot of the times people just have a few different questions, and I kind of just tell them what they need to know, and they run with it, right? That's probably the majority of my interaction, right? But
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful. It's actually, yeah, I got no, you definitely need to pay more attention. And this is the awareness of the topic. So, it's absolutely very good to do.
Yeah. Thanks, McKelly. Michele, I'll try to pronounce your name correctly. Yeah. I've been all over the world, so I should be pretty good at pronouncing other names in other ways, but sometimes it's still challenging. Anyway, I am gonna hop off here. I need to get ready to get into the office for that SOAR training. If anybody is building any projects on Cardano, by the way, in the beginning, Joke and I were talking about a concept I'm walking through this week about SOAR. So it's security operation automated and response, automation and response. If you're building a project on anything, if you're building an application or anything, it's probably not a fundamental that smaller teams will use, but it's still a good fundamental thing to understand. So if you're curious, look that up too. But anyway, I got to get ready to get into doing that today. Wow, I've had a lot of people join in the last few minutes, and I'm ready to close up. Unfortunately, I do have to go because I have to shower and get dressed for work. But whoever did just join, I'm sorry that I'm closing up. But if you want to listen to the recording, or if you want to listen to any other my other stuff, just I'm Holy Macaroni. But you can go to my Epoxx account or Holy Macaroni. You find all my links and stuff. But anyway, I'm gonna quit rambling. I'm gonna hop off here. I hope everybody has a great what is it, Tuesday now? I don't know anymore. Yeah, Tuesday. Hope everybody has a good Tuesday, and we'll talk soon. I'll do another one of these next week. I try to either do them Sunday or Monday. I might do another one later this week too, like Wednesday or Thursday night or something. I'm not sure yet, but I'll definitely post it out there. But anyway, I hope everybody has a great day and take care.
Have a good one, man. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Joker, and thank you, McKelly. Bye.